You're listening to Small But Mighty, the podcast of the Small Nonprofits Alliance, the online hub for Australia's small charities.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Small But Mighty. I'm excited to have here with me today Neil Taylor, the founder of Holy Fools, which is a fabulous small charity in the outer outskirts of Melbourne, and he'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But hello, Neil, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Bianca. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. To get started, what we often ask some of our guests is a question that relates to our podcast. And what does Small But Mighty mean to you and your organisation?
Good question. I guess in our interpretation of it is that being small means we're a little bit more nimble than larger organisations. One of the areas, because we deal with homelessness and we're not government funded, we don't have to do all the red tape that the federal government demands for its funding. So I guess that means we're a lot more agile at dealing with the responses when they do come up. For example, we can complain about something that's maybe happening in the area, or deal with the council or other government issues without really worrying about the fact that we're federally funded and have some sort of restrictions on what we can actually do.
Yeah, fabulous, fabulous. That is definitely a few great assets of small organisations, and that independence from, you know, large funders, whether it's the government or corporate organisations, definitely gives you some of that freedom.
Yeah, but it also means too, because we're a small organisation, we're a lot more agile at being able to, like I said, be very much respond to things. So in making decisions, I guess, is not so much a bureaucracy. It's getting a couple of people together and saying, hey, let's do something about this, and going off and doing it instead of, waiting for some sort of bureaucracy red tape to happen.
Yeah, true. So what would be your best piece of advice for others on their journey of being small but mighty?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think probably it would be to remember that you're not alone, that there are many other people out there like us who are really struggling and striving to make a big difference in the world. And I think things like the Small Nonprofits Alliance and things like that make a huge difference in allowing us to understand that there are many other people who are experiencing the same difficulties and same problems and running an organisation, and that there's definitely help out there and definitely support from other people, and that you don't really need to reinvent the wheel if they're, in doing something, because there's always someone else that's kind of can maybe offer you some advice.
Yeah, not reinventing the wheel is something that I sort of talk to nonprofits about a lot. If there is, other bits and pieces out there that you can use and modify and, adjust it to suit your organisation, that's a really great way to do it. So that's some fabulous advice. Thank you.
No, not a problem.
I understand you have a background in film, TV and advertising before you transitioned into counselling and then the community welfare sector. Was there a specific point in time for you that that you recall when you sort of changed that direction? And I guess, was there a trigger for you in that area?
That's a really good question. I think I'd been involved in the film and television industry for several years in Queensland, and found it very, very superficial and very, it was a very burgeoning kind of community as well, but it just didn't kind of seem real. Everything was very false and plasticky and kind of thing. Didn't feel right anyway.
Yeah.
So when I moved down to Melbourne, I was working with a couple of organisations down here, just doing some marketing and things like that for them, and started to notice more and more people who were hurting and on the streets and things like that, and really starting to think that maybe perhaps there was something I needed to do. Then I ended up creating a small advertising agency, and we were doing some work with real estate agents, things like that. And we just started to notice, we were putting all these amazing ads for property profile magazines and all these sort of things. And it was really hard to sort of justify what we were doing there, and then going out and seeing, you know, out of our office and seeing a couple of doors down, there was someone sitting in the doorway who had been sleeping there overnight. So I started to have a real, I guess, sense of imbalance in the way what I was perceiving I was doing, and thought, really struggled with it, and made a decision that I really wanted to find out what I could do, you know, and did I need to go and do some more study. So that's where I decided to go and study a diploma of community welfare work about 12 years ago now. Yep. The idea was I wanted to learn the language and understand more about what people were going through, because I just felt it was no point in really just jumping off and going and starting to help people unless I could kind of understand a bit more about where they were, what situations they were in, what sort of things they were facing, and the language, I guess, that the, you know, that culture of welfare kind of maybe that exists in. And it wasn't to go ahead and use the language, but it was just to understand that language if I was dealing with other agencies and organisations. So, but it was a slow burn trigger, I think. It wasn't a major sort of event in my life. I guess too, the fact that it had been sitting in the back of my head, but my grandfather had been homeless in South Africa for pretty much most of his life, and I'd heard stories of him and things through my dad and other relatives, and so I guess there was that had sort of been at the back of my head all the time too, and it all sort of merged together, and you know, was there for. I guess the impetus to go and start studying that diploma of community welfare work.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of transition, and thanks for sharing. And I definitely understand what you mean around the film and television sort of space. I actually worked in advertising for 4 or 5 years when I first started my career, and I kind of had that same feeling that you sort of think there's just must be more to life than what I'm doing here in this sort of space. So I totally understand that. But it was actually really nice just to hear you talk about how you sort of went into learning a little bit about community welfare just more from a you know, an understanding point of view, and to be able to, I guess, have some better way to relate to the people that you were coming into contact with on a, you know, daily or weekly basis in your local community. That's a really lovely approach and a really genuine, I think, you know, approach to what you've done and where you've been, which is really lovely. So obviously then that's taken you along a bit of a journey now, and you've founded Holy Fools, which is a small charity based in the Yarra Ranges on the outskirts of Melbourne. From my understanding, that was just over 10 years ago. Your organisation works to support a portion of more than 100,000 Aussies that are experiencing homelessness every day. And one of your programs is called Street Angels. Can you tell us a little bit more about Holy Fools and the program of Street Angels?
Certainly. Yeah, Holy Fools is a very small organization. But we, as you said, we've just celebrated last October was our 10th anniversary of being founded. And we've worked in sort of the space over in the outer east of Melbourne called the Yarra Ranges and Maroondah, with those who are homeless and people who are at risk of homelessness. And it originally started off working in community meals and being a chaplain, I guess, to folks who were at the meals. And, you know, there was often including taking people to hospital, to doctor's appointments, to police stations, to court and things like that. And that kind of was the, I guess, the impetus to start the organisation. And originally the organisation was set up as, an insurance, an ID for an insurance, to have insurance for what I was doing, because I was working with a couple of different organisations and both churches that were run by churches, and neither of them could actually cover what I was doing outside of their program. So Holy Fools originally began as just a way to get insurance to cover the fact that I was doing chaplaincy out on the streets, and also to work with people in the different locations. Street Angels.
So that was sort of an outreach sort of aspect to the work that you'd already been doing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was we'd been doing a lot of work with a couple of the major community meals out in Croydon, one called The Dining Room, another one called Vive Cafe. And it was really difficult to see people who would come to that, and they would often be homeless or really struggling with something, with addictions or at risk of homelessness. And they would sit down and tell you these amazing stories and open their hearts to you, and then you'd basically have dessert with them and they'd leave. And it was really difficult. I found it very difficult just to see them, to spend that time there and watch them leave. I just felt that I had to take that step outside of the dining rooms and go and walk alongside these people, just to see that I could maybe carry them, help them when they stumbled, and maybe bring a bit more hope into their lives than just a warm stomach. So with that idea, we started Street Angels 6 years ago, and Street Angels was designed. Was designed especially for rough sleepers and for those who were avoiding the community meals, because we'd noticed that there was a number of folks who were roughing it in the local area, Lilydale, who you would have a community meal, but they wouldn't attend there. They weren't attending any of the agencies either. So we started talking and hanging out with them and finding what was going on, and a lot of them weren't interested in going to these agencies for help, because they would always have to go to them and sort of go very uncomfortably into sort of ask for some help. So we decided to set up Street Angels as a way of just going to where they were and offering a very simple lunch, and also just being there to say, hey, we're here, let's sit down and talk, and we're here to listen to what you want to say, and if we can help you with some basic stuff like food, clothing, blankets, backpack beds, and referrals if we need to. So that's where Street Angels began. And it's pretty much developed since then to be our outreach service as well. So we do not only the outreach on a Wednesday at noon in Melba Park in Lilydale, but we use the term Street Angels refers to sort of any of the outreach services that we do, which is including visitation into the regular haunts of people who are rough sleeping in the area, and just check on welfare and things like that.
Yeah. And how many, I understand you have a number of volunteers that work with you as Street Angels. So how many volunteers do you work with on average on a week or month, however you sort of account for them? And how many people roughly are you supporting through this program that are living rough?
At last Wednesday, we had 6 rough sleepers turn up for lunch, and that was kind of a record for Wednesday. We often have people who have got accommodation, whether it's in a boarding house or other spaces, but that was the first time we'd had 6 people who were actually rough sleeping turn up for lunch. As far as volunteers go, we have one or two people that are regular helpers on a Wednesday who are very much passionate about what we do and like to come down and help out as much as possible. And then we have a series of probably about a dozen other people that rotate on a roster to either provide a meal or come down and help serve a meal. So, yeah, it depends. On a regular day without COVID-19 hanging over us, we usually have maybe 3 or 4 volunteers down there just talking to people, hanging out, helping with the food, making sure people are getting what they need and things like that. And at the moment, we've had to scale back, obviously, to 1 or 2 people to try and prevent, any further health issues.
It's a really challenging time, and I think that that's kind of a good segue to my next question. I guess as you just mentioned, we're currently in the time of the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's obviously on a global level, it's affecting many people, and many different areas of our community are having a light shone on them during this time. Homelessness and how such a health pandemic puts people without safe shelter, at much greater risk is one of those areas. how have you guys at Holy Fool seen the lives of the people that you were working with in the Yarra Valley and surrounding regions change in the recent weeks and months with this situation?
Well, that's another good question. Yeah, we've seen that because as you may realise that anyone who's rough sleeping it doesn't have a safe place to go and self-isolate because they're obviously out and about. So what we're finding is that people are very confused and very hurt, about seeing the self-isolation and very confused about how they're supposed to do it. But it's also seeing that there have been a lot of closure of other operations and charities and groups in the area that have provided help because of obviously the COVID-19 crisis that have prevented, have closed down. So there's obviously not the resources available at the moment for a number of people. A good example is showering. There's a number of places in the local area that offer showers for anyone who's rough sleeping it. But at the moment, because of the COVID-19, all these showers are shut down. So really, there's nowhere for anyone who's rough sleeping to shower apart from maybe going down to a lake or something where the public showers are outside to get somewhere. So I think one of the biggest struggles is that they're finding is the loss of a lot of lifelines that they used to have. The other thing is too is that people are very much more guarded about talking to them and encountering them. So, you know, there's a lot of people who might, there's one guy in particular that's been sleeping in a rotunda at a park, and often people would drop food around to him or say hello to him and engage him. But the number of people who are doing that now has dropped off, and in fact people aren't dropping as much food around to him or even talking to him anymore.
Yeah.
So I guess the loneliness factor is another area that's sort of increased because there's very little places for him to go.
Yeah.
The federal government's allocated a number of funds for homeless people, but the funds are only for folks who have been tested for COVID-19 or being diagnosed with COVID-19 to be housed in one of four nursing homes in Melbourne during this period. So there's no additional funding for crisis accommodation or for putting people in motels or anything like that. So basically, they're still in the same situation they were, just having to deal with the extra stress of what's going on at the moment.
It's really both quite eye-opening, I guess, to the situation and the challenges, obviously, that people experiencing homelessness are facing. You know, like you just said, having a real challenge finding a place to actually have a shower. That's such a basic, you know, thing that everybody, well, not everybody, but most people would just do every day without even thinking about it or even questioning their ability or access to having a shower. It's really quite confronting, actually, to hear you talk about some of those things, like you say, those support networks that the people that are already living in these challenging situations are now not having. And I know I've heard a lot of people talk about isolation and you know, I understand that we are meant to be self-isolating and you know, social distancing, but I think the word you used was loneliness and that can be, that's happening with people that are, you know, not experiencing homelessness. So some of those other challenges are just compounded, aren't they, for this sort of cohort of our community.
Definitely. And I think loneliness is probably one of the biggest factors at the moment with the COVID-19 is because the self-isolation is asking people to stay at home. There are a lot of people who rely on not only community meals but sort of places, you know, some of the fast food places to go and hang out and get a coffee or whatever, now finding that they can't do all that. So unfortunately we're seeing, I know there's a spike in mental health issues.
Yes, definitely.
But also there's, unfortunately, I know there's also been a spike in suicides. So I think, you know, we're not seeing, I guess, the dark side of COVID-19, which is that area. But there is definitely a dark side to it that seems to be happening. And It must be very depressing, and I know that it is depressing for a number of the guys, and which is why a lot of them turn to drugs and alcohol. So,
I did notice. I saw on TV the other day in a organisation, I think it was the Wayside Chapel in Sydney. I'm not sure if it's in conjunction with the local government up there, but they've gone out to a number of people in the Greater Sydney region that are sleeping rough and been able to have them put up for, I think, until the end of May it was, in hotels. And then not, I know the initiative that you mentioned, it was only for people that had been at risk of or had been diagnosed with COVID-19. But this initiative that's actually running in Sydney at the moment that they were highlighting on the TV is talking to something different, which is still, I think, a great opportunity. But, you know, that's still only a finite amount of time. It's only 5 or 6 weeks that they're going to be given that opportunity. And then, you know, there's just, I don't know, it's such a complex issue, homelessness. And I think the more I personally learn about the issue, the more I understand how complex it is. It's not just about someone doesn't have somewhere to sleep. There's so many different layers of complexities that go with it. And I think as a community, we need to look at all of those levels of complexities, not just in a time when there's a pandemic and that sort of stuff. How have you seen your how have you been able to change your day-to-day operations to address some of those new challenges? Because I heard you say that you normally have a handful of people go out on your Wednesdays, but now you only have one or two because you have to still obey the social distancing rules and regulations. So how are you what have you been able to do in your day-to-day operations to support the community that needs your help?
Well, we've, as I said, we've had to scale those sort of things back. We've been handing out hand sanitizer and ensuring people are aware of some of the available resources, but also we've been providing food, a lot more food to people, because a lot of the avenues, as I said, that they used to go to for food and things like that have been closed down. So we're finding that our handing out of non-perishable food and things like that has increased dramatically. We've also seen a very much an increase in people who are coming to the area and identifying as being homeless. So I guess the resources have been stressed too with having to sort of now deal with a lot of these other people. We work in conjunction with a couple of the agencies in the area who are more housing agencies to ensure that we can make sure that we understand who's homeless in the area and are able to care for them. So all three of the agencies, including ourselves, have noticed a dramatic increase in doing that. And I guess the challenge has been able to go and help them, but also, you know, keeping a safe distance and maintaining the restrictions and things like that, which is really difficult in the sense that all of our programs and Holy Fools are all down, you know, it's all been very much about community and about, caring for one another. And it's, I find it very difficult to care for people on a greater level when I've got to maintain that 1.5 meters distance from them. So it's been very difficult in that regard, but we've been able to sort of, I guess, transition into just doing takeaway meals and not encouraging people to hang around, but it's been very much an anti what we normally do. It's, you know, against what we would normally want to do. It's also meant we're very much more busier in trying to resource ourselves and things like food and things like that. So we've had to increase a bit of a demand for non-perishable food and also for funds and things like that to keep us going.
I was going to ask you about that, actually. Have you how have you been able to keep up with that additional demand for, like you said, some of the foods and things that you're sort of handing out more? Have you been able to get an increase of in-kind donations or at any of the other food sort of services out there able to help, or have you been able to do a bit more of a fundraising campaign or appeal or anything like that?
Well, it's interesting. I think that there's been a bit more of an outpouring of of care from people in spite of COVID-19. I think there's a lot more people who are interested in helping others. And so we've seen a bit of an increase in people wanting to donate foodstuffs to us. I guess one of the benefits too has been that we've been and it's quite a negative benefit, but it's a benefit, is that a number of the big restaurants and wineries and things like that in the area have had to shut down. So we've had lots of calls from a number of these wineries and restaurants, and been able to collect some amazing food from them to hand out. So just recently one of them contacted us and we went and picked up all these cheeses, so we were able to hand out all these, absolutely exotic cheeses and goat's cheese to camembert and all these sort of things. So, things like that.
I can imagine, as a cheese lover myself, that would have been a very odd but delightful surprise to some of your members in your networks that probably, probably really haven't thought about having any fancy cheeses for a while, I would imagine.
That's right. And it was it was a surprise for us as well. So, so we've been quite blessed and lucky to get a number of these restaurants and things like that have closed down to provide the food for us. But in the same token, we've also seen a lot of families and groups of people who have said, listen, we'll start collecting some non-perishable food for you and bring it down. So we've had we put out a couple of appeals, and we've just had a really positive return on that, where we've had people just come down with literally boxes of non-perishable food they've been collecting either from their pantry or from going to the shops over the last couple of weeks. So it's been, I guess that's been amazing. A flip side to the isolation is that we've seen an increase in people caring and sort of reaching out to say, can we help?
I think it has, from what I've seen, I think, like what we were talking about before with the loneliness and you were saying it's hard for you to, you find it really hard to deliver your service when your service is actually all about connection and that social side of it. And now you are having to keep your distance and remove some of that connectivity. It makes it really challenging. But I think, like you said, the flip side of that is people are now spending more time at home, so they are losing some of their own connections to some extent, or physical connections. I know a lot of people are still, having different, FaceTime or phone calls with families and friends, but that physical connection for a lot of people is gone. So I think perhaps there is that perhaps a greater awareness of what, not having that connection with people can be. I remember an article I read a number of years ago actually about, what's the best sort of thing that you can do when you see a homeless person or someone sleeping rough, on your daily travels or something. And it really just talked to the fact that you could just say hello. And
exactly.
And one of their biggest challenges for this group of people a lot of the time is that they feel invisible. And that, I remember when I read that article, it really struck a chord with me and has probably changed a little bit of the way I, interact on a personal level when I sort of am in that situation. But, for the general public, if they're not in that space, sometimes it's too far removed to even really think about it. And like we were saying before, there's so many complexities to it. People don't necessarily understand that either. But maybe this time has been able to let people see that, what I'm trying to say, I guess, is when something's taken away from you, like these physical connections that you have with people, you can then see how important they are. And then maybe you have an understanding for the people that don't have those types of physical connections in their life. Maybe you can relate a little bit more to that. So,
I think you're right. I think that it's definitely made people a lot more aware, I guess, of being isolated and not having that connection. And maybe I think in the same token, it's allowed them to sort of maybe reflect on their own lives and what they're doing. But I think too, it's also allowed people to spend more time on the net maybe and looking up things and, so I think there's been quite a bit of we've seen a big resurgence in our website and also Facebook. So we've seen quite a bit of you know, obviously people are sitting at home on their computers or doing whatever in the self-isolation to find out more about what's going on in the area and to say, hey, listen, what can I do to do something and to help people in the area?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the whole online thing, people are spending a lot more time online and reaching out to others in that way. I know through our Small Nonprofits Alliance, we've had members ask a few different questions about digital communications and social media to connect with people. So we've run a couple of webinars on those sorts of things, and it is really important. So it's great to hear that you guys are seeing an increase, I guess, in people connecting with you that way and reaching out and finding you, I guess, that way. Have you been able to sort of capture some of the, I guess, data or the information or the details of the people that have been able to support you and that are bringing down the boxes of goods and things like that so that can help grow your supporter community?
Yeah, we've been able to. Obviously, I would like them to more of them to sign up for sort of our newsletters or to sign up to for email addresses. But we're getting a lot more people who are signing up as fans and things like that on Facebook, and much more interested in sort of what we're posting and reacting to what we're doing. We've not translated that into adding them to a mailing list or anything like that at the moment, but that's sort of in the process of hopefully happening soon. But we've seen a lot more people interested in what we're doing and making sort of inquiries as to whether they can get involved.
Yeah, that's really good. That's fabulous to hear. I think it is, like you said, you know, it's a really terrible time and challenging time for so many people with the current pandemic that's happening around the world. But there are, I think, little nuggets of joy, I guess, I'm sort of have been calling them, where you see and hear of stories of people just, you know, really being kind and having that different approach to life that perhaps they may not have otherwise had. So it's really good to hear that you guys at Holy Fools have been experiencing that and having the community really support you while you continue to support the people in need in your area. I guess one of the advantages that you spoke of earlier about being a small charity is that ability to be quite agile. And you said, you know, that's something for you that's what you define as being small but mighty. So has that ability to be agile, has that helped you through this current situation and the ability to sort of change your approach and your day-to-day programs and activities?
It's been the reason I said it was sort of being agile is that one of the things that it's happened is that we've been pretty much the only agency that's sort of small enough and nimble enough to go out and do outreach. Because of the other two agencies that we're dealing with are fairly large, and one of them's a national agency, they're both very much encumbered with red tape and safety aspects that the organisation has passed through to the way they behave, including one of them, how many people are in the office and things like that. So as far as the outreach services are concerned to people on the streets, we're the only agency that's really out there doing it now, because a lot of the other agencies have got restrictions on what they can do and how they do it. So I guess that's one of the reasons, being agile enough and flexible enough to make our own decisions and not have bureaucracy hold us down has been a real boon to be able to allow us to go and keep going and doing what we're doing.
Yeah, that's fabulous. That's so really good to hear, and it's promising that that you've been able to adjust and you know really support the community at this time. So Holy Fools, as you mentioned, has been around just over 10 years now, and I'm sure that there's been other challenges that you have faced through that time. Has there been another big challenge or something that you have been faced with and been able to overcome?
That's another great question. And we've had a couple of fairly large crises that we've had to overcome. First one occurred about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, where we just received a Feed Melbourne grant to buy a van, and we'd bought this new Toyota Hiace van, and we just had it sign written, and literally not even maybe a month after we'd had it, it was parked out front of our offices one night, and an ice addict, a local ice addict, broke into our office, pretty much stripped the place clean and stole our van. And the positive side of that was, I mean, it was a real shock to come down to the office and find everything missing, but the real shock to that was that the community really rallied around the fact that we'd had this van stolen and very much was very supportive. So we had a really big influx of people offering foodstuffs, money, offers of aid and things like that. And it was interesting too that people kept telling us they'd seen the van, and we posted on social media a number of photos of what the van looked like. And we were getting reports all the time from people from all around the country saying, oh, I've just seen the van, I've just seen the van. You know, And in fact, the weekend that the van was located, we were getting reports up from Lismore that someone had seen the van up in Lismore. And yeah. in fact, the van was found in Chirnside Park here and down here next to one of the suburbs next to Lilydale, and in someone's garage. So I don't know what people were seeing around the country, but the van was there. And the guy had actually had it repainted. It was a white van, and he had it repainted matte black, and it stripped off all the signage, and was using it for robberies to support his habit. That was the first sort of major crisis, but it was a real, I guess, incredibly negative publicity that was a real flip side. Was it had a silver lining to it, is that we were heard about it in the mainstream media, and in fact there was a couple of like the BBC covered us and things like that, you know. Oh, wow. One of their news reports, but it was a real flip. It was really amazing because we had started having all these offers of help, and it sort of got our name out there, and I guess was one of the big boons for us. And then last year, and around this time last year, on Anzac Day, we had Feed Melbourne grant again, and had bought a new trailer, a much larger trailer to replace a smaller one that we'd been using for our outreach. Literally had just the sign written, had everything, all the shelving and stuff put into the trailer. Oh. And it was kept very locked up. It had both a wheel lock and a tow ball lock and all these other locks on it. And on Anzac Day, unknown people came down and stole it. And we never heard from it again. So I guess the same thing happened there too, was that that negative outpouring of information on social media gained again the silver lining, was offers of assistance and help, and people becoming a bit more aware of what we were doing and things like that. So yeah, both of them have been incredibly traumatic and negative events, but on the flip side, the silver lining has actually been that it's been really a benefit for us to have our name out there, and also for the reception of all the amazing outpourings of support that we've had.
Yeah, that's they are some big challenges to have had, and very similar circumstances, the two different things that have happened. But it is nice, like you say, I guess, to have some of the silver lining in a situation like that. And I think it was Albert Einstein that had a quote, was quoted of saying something like, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. And I think that's that's an example of how that's come about. And I think this current situation with the pandemic is probably highlighted in some of those sorts of similar quotes and thinkings, that there is a lot of challenges going on for many people and for many organisations and businesses even, but it's sometimes within those challenges that we can find some opportunity that really has a greater outcome in the longer run, which is hopefully what is what you're seeing down at Holy Fools there. So Neil, I know Before we wrap up, I would just love to ask you one last question, because I know you're a very, very busy fellow. Your work at Holy Fools keeps you busy. I know you have lots of other commitments and things that you do in the community, and you have a family. What is it that motivates you to keep doing what you do every day?
That's a great question. Again, I guess the what keeps me motivated is the fact that there are still people who need help. And I think that until we can, as a community, start to recognise that it's going to take the community to work together to stop this and address some of the issues that lead to homelessness, we're always going to need people who are going to need help out there. So I guess that what we're doing is it motivates me to know that we make a small difference. And if I can make one difference in someone's life one every day, I guess that's what's the biggest motivation to keep going, is that, you know, we are making a difference in people's lives. So some days it's really difficult. I must admit that it is very overwhelming. But on the whole, I feel, you know, knowing that we are making a difference and we can see change and have some positive stories from these changes, that that's what, I guess, what keeps us going.
Yeah, thanks. Neil, you are a very good man and inspiring founder of an organisation that is doing some really, really important work in your community, and probably not, you know, more important at this particular time in our history of what's happening in the world. So thanks so much for your time today. Like I said, I know you've been really busy, but I do really appreciate you coming onto our Small But Mighty podcast to share your story and the work that you're doing in this current situation. I do really appreciate your time.
Not at all. I really value the time that I've been able to spend with you and talking. And I mean, my association with you know, has been a real benefit to ours, our organisation, from the grant that we got to go to the fundraising workshop that through you guys, through to the regular information we get from you, but also the Small Profits Alliance, I think has been a real amazing benefit. So I really encourage anyone out there listening to sign up and get involved, because it's easy to do what you're doing, but it's good to hear from other people who are sort of maybe doing the same thing as you and get some support.
Yeah, thanks so much for that those lovely words there. That's really appreciated. How can people get in touch with Holy Fools at this time if they want to make a donation, or if they are in the area and can contribute some food? What's the best way to reach out or to follow what you guys are doing?
Well, we're on Facebook and a bunch of the other social medias, but if you go to our website, which is www.holyfools.org.au, you can donate there, and there's also some information on there about material donations and also volunteering and things like that. So, yeah, pretty much all the information is there. But like I said, we're on all the social media, and there's links from the website through to most of the chemo social media sites as well.
Thanks once again, Neil. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on our podcast, and I wish you all the best for the next couple of weeks and months through this situation, and I look forward to seeing the journey of Holy Fools over the next 10 years.
Thanks, Bianca, and I look forward to more too. Thanks.